and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 430. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Emily Soden.
What's up, guys?
Oh, it's all good. I'm speaking quite fast because I am aware that we've got lots and lots and lots of new releases to get through, which makes it sound like it's a bad thing. But no, good. It's really good. I've played most of the games this weekend, and I've come away from them thinking, oh, games are nice.
Yeah, it's always nice when you get a week like that, because sometimes you can just kind of have the one or two which you're like, yeah, it's all right. But when you get a week where it's like, oh my god, mobile gaming is great.
Solid gold. And I've got some lovely stuff that might appear in Game of the Year lists, I reckon. And a genuine first, where you've got a mobile port of a multi-platform game that's released on the same day on all platforms, and I reckon the mobile version is the best.
I've heard that, and I think I know which one you're talking about.
That doesn't happen too often. So, yeah, we got quite the show for you. News stuff will be happening along the lines of what they've confirmed about Mario Kart Tour. It's going to be free to start, but what does that mean? We've got stuff about Nintendo Labo and the things that you can do with all that cardboard, more than perhaps you expect. Crash Bandicoot, Insane Trilogy, coming to Switch, along with Layers of Fear Legacy. This is exciting stuff. Plus, new releases including the likes of Dandara, Kitty Powers Love Life, Darkside Detective, and of course, Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition. We've got all the info for you right here. And an interview with Kitty Powers and Rich, the creator of the game. They're sort of the same person. And we're going to talk about how you can fix other people's love lives via your mobile phone and a few well-placed cameras. But first, the news. We discussed the news last week that Mario Kart is coming to mobile devices in the form of Mario Kart Tour. There wasn't much information beyond that, but little bits of info have started to seep out through the cracks of Nintendo's PR system. One of the things that was confirmed here via DNA, which is that company that Nintendo is working with, and they've worked with on all their mobile games because DNA are the big kind of mobile experts with which they partnered, is that Mario Kart Tour will, quote, be free to start. You did this story, Em, and the reason we did it is because there's this kind of lack of continuity, let's say, between what free to start means and what free to play means. And everyone seems to have a different idea, don't they?
Yeah, it's an odd one. Like, I kind of, when I saw the news yesterday on Twitter, I kind of had to sit and, like, read the comments and just ponder for a little bit, because I was like, I really don't know whether they're going to continue on with the free to start stuff, as in free to start equals free to play, or if they're meaning something different, because with Mario Kart being such a huge franchise, they would try and go for a premium model, but then their free-to-play stuff is more successful business-wise.
Yeah, and the reason there's confusion is because we in the industry, and you know, just general punters, have got used to calling free-to-play games free-to-play. It was called freemium, or you know, F2P, or whatever they want to call it. And there was a little bit of a moment where the App Store decided to reclassify the free-to-play stuff, because when you would go and purchase a free-to-play game, it would have the button, which you would click, which would usually have the price in it. But in free-to-play games, it would say free. And after a while, people were like, well, it's not free, is it? Because it's got loads of stuff in it that I have to buy, in some cases, have to actually buy, or in other cases, just optional extras, and they can cost you loads and loads and loads of money. And parents who had their kids suddenly run up thousands of pounds of bills on their iTunes account went like, this isn't free, don't put free on it. So they changed it, and it now says get instead of free, which was kind of the beginning of this like friction between what free to play, is it free to play really? And one of the things that Nintendo actually specified, Satoru Iwata, before he passed, actually said, I don't like the term free to play. I prefer the term free to start, which is kind of equating the two things. So lots of people have gone, oh, it's free to start. That means it's going to be like Mario Run, where you just play the first three chapters, it's free, and then it will cost you, I don't know, £9 or something to buy. Whereas other people have seen this as a sign that, oh no, it means that it's free to play, because that's what Iwata said. So they've released more information, but it's just confused people more.
Pretty much. I mean, I do kind of really like it, because it means that rather than them just dropping it and be like, okay, Mario Kart Tour, this and that, now people are talking about it, being like, okay, but what does it mean, though?
And it just harks back to what we said last week, which we won't go over again. It's just what we want to avoid is I don't want in-app purchases where I get to buy, you know, extra shells and stuff like that so that I can unwin. I don't think anybody wants that. So that's why people are so on tenterhooks about what's it going to be. Are they going to make it free to play and awful, or is it going to be like Mario or whatever? But you'll at least be able to play a bit of it. We know that much for nothing. What form it will take, whether it will be any good, remains to be seen. Sticking with Nintendo for a moment, though, Labo, which was the other big announcement, or Labo, because it's a lab, I don't know, big announcement from a couple of weeks back, where get cardboard, make toy out of cardboard, then like sync it up with your Switch, and then play fun games like fishing, or make a big punching robot backpack monster, or a piano, or whatever. The original stuff they released about that game was it was going to be available in two different packs, and you'd be able to assemble stuff based on those preset models. So you could build a piano, or you could, you know, build a fishing rod or whatever, and you'd have like seven things you could do with it. It seems that after a little bit of time at Toy-Con Garage, which was a Nintendo event Nintendo attended, they revealed that actually it's going to be a bit more malleable than we originally thought. The idea being that apparently, using the software, you can make your own custom toys or mix and match parts from the kits to make other gadgets.
Right.
So the example they gave is you could use parts from the motorbike or fishing rod, for example, to control the RC car model thing that they made. And they also like made an electric guitar that uses the piano software and some original cardboard cutouts. So they're saying that you can potentially make your own stuff, which really does open it up massively.
That's actually, like, that's really cool.
Yeah? You didn't sound convinced.
No, I kind of had a think about it just then. I was like, because I was just thinking, with it being made out of cardboard, would that mean its lifespan would be slightly shorter if you try and use it for two different things? Because then you're bending and folding and trying to mash things together and all that sort of stuff.
Possibly.
Or... I don't know, because we know that the Labo is not going to be made out of your average cardboard.
No, I think it's supposed to be a bit more sturdy than the normal stuff, and presumably, hopefully, have a little waterproofing layer, I would think.
I'm sure. Oh my god, yeah. If it's aimed towards children are sticky.
Yeah, they
well,
are, though.
No, you know, any child you've seen, they've just got stuff everywhere.
They do. They're like, they're luminescent. They shimmer with grim. That's true. But the thing that this announcement kind of hammers home is it makes it much more like a Meccano set or much more like a Lego set, where you've got tools now, you can kind of make whatever you want. And that to me is particularly exciting, more so than just here are seven things you can build and that's it, go home. The fun of Lego and these construction sets for me is always like, right, what can I make with this? Can I make anything? And then using the bits like the little battery pack bit of Lego, which, you know, can turn lights on. For me, it was like, right, what kind of weird light construction thing can I make by daisy chaining all the light bits together, all the LEDs, and will the battery still power them all? That was kind of the fun exploration aspect of it. And if they can make it work with this, if you can really build your own mad contraptions, that's going to be even more wicked than I thought.
So is it like the fact that when you have the two pieces of kit, it then changes the game itself?
I don't know. Again, it's sort of a bit limited. They showed off a couple of things, like here's a new construction, here's a guitar that we've made out of cardboard. They didn't show exactly how they did it or whether you have to tweak the software. But I assume... Actually, I can't assume that's a bad thing to do. I guess they'll have ways of, like, what kind of game mechanic do you want to use? And maybe you can put it together in a Little Big Planet game creator kind of way. They are open to giving you the tools to make your own stuff. And if they can do it with Labo, all the better. Because otherwise, there's a lot of cardboard going to waste for just one thing. Also, sticking with the Switch, something that is in your wheelhouse, Crash Bandicoot, the Insane Trilogy, is probably coming to the Switch.
The news blew up the other day, being like, oh my god, the Insane Trilogy is coming to Switch. And I said to you that this is a huge deal because it's the first time the original three games have come out of PlayStation.
Yes, that's what kind of makes it interesting, because Crash Bandicoot is a Naughty Dog creation. The original three were the guys behind Uncharted and The Last of Us. It was where they, one of the things they got big doing. But it was, like Uncharted and everything, it was a PlayStation exclusive. So this would be the first time it appears on another platform.
Yeah, and that's like someone who grew up, you know, early 90s and onwards. you know, I grew up with the Crash Bandicoot series and all that sort of stuff, so this is very exciting if it proves to be true. However, I saw articles the day afterwards saying that the actual news page, which kind of, you know, let it slip, had actually been, like, removed or altered or something like that.
Yeah, so it was in the Licensing Sourcebook Europe, page 97, which is apparently by the licensing manager of GBI, who's Max Agrier, I think his name is. And we got a little screenshot of it, you did, and it's embedded in the article. However, as you say, that page was swiftly removed from the magazine. So we don't know whether that's just to try and cover their tracks or whether they've said something that they shouldn't have. But the quote is, "The new game was a huge success at retail," this is Crash Bandicoot the Trilogy, "with no marketing spend. Next year it will be going broader," brackets, Switch and PC. So that's your potential confirmation. I reckon it'll happen. Like, it seems daft for them not to.
I think, you know, because I've got it on PlayStation. I've, you know, we were actually just playing it last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs so well, and it's so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of does make you realise how bad the first one was. But
oh, right. Well, this one has been a complete, like, reskin, as in they've not just HD-ified it, they've changed the character models.
Oh, yeah. It's like, if they had made this game now.
Yeah, it's what we built from the ground up.
Really, really swanky. And I'm usually not a massive fan of remasters.
Mm.
Just because, you know, I don't know, they don't always get them right. And it kind of ruins some of the original feel of it. But this, you can see where they were going, trying to capture the old game in a new form.
Mm.
But it's all completely as it was back then. Like, they haven't changed anything, just the appearance,
just to
make
look.
It more,
yeah,
you know, appropriate to now's graphics.
Because when you look at the original Crash, it was like a terribly wobbly polygon. Like,
well, it's, know, typical mess. PlayStation.
yeah. It's early Tekken. First Tekken game on the PS1 is... Yeah, all those amazingly, like, wobbly textures that you got on the PS1, where they would just pop, pop, pop. I used to love that stuff. That was great.
Yeah. It does make me sad that, you know, the generation gamers today will never know the excitement of experiencing water effects for the first time. Like, the ripples around your feet in Tomb Raider 2, I think, or 3.
And I was going, oh my god, it's like, it's real, I could dive straight in. And it's just like one flat layer of blue with a few like white parentheses going boom, 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 boom out from the side of your feet.
Yeah, my mind was blown when it came out. I was like, oh my god, this is so realistic.
Yeah. But that does, it is part of the atmosphere of the game. It's why I was a bit concerned about this Shadow of the Colossus remake that's just gone live and is actually getting really great notes, because it's one of my favourite games. And I was like, oh, don't, because sometimes when they remake these things, it looks all like 4K and lovely, but it doesn't look like the game, and apparently this one's been received really well, so I may wind up getting it. Any excuse to play it again?
Yeah, I expect you probably will.
I probably will.
That's kind of the feeling towards, you know, the old Crash series.
Mm.
But coming to the Switch would be such a clever move for it, because the Switch is the perfect platform for such a game.
Because it's colourful and you know,
platformy
colourful, fun.
Yeah, it's bright, and it's, you know, you've got that variety of different viewpoints and levels and things. Like, it's really, really old school stuff.
Yeah.
But like, when I caught onto myself when I first started playing the Insane Trilogy, like, last year, I actually wasn't using the analog sticks at all. I was just using the, you know, the direction
buttons. Straight back to the original PS1 setup controller map.
Yeah. Just automatically like that. It's just
lush. I found that when I started playing Wipeout on the PS3, maybe even the PS2, because I spent so much time on the PS1 playing with the D-pads, it was a real kind of learning curve to start using the analog stick instead for steering. It was weird.
And of course, you know, if they said it was going to happen,
it will.
Especially with a new game in the works as well.
Yeah, they're just covering their tracks here. So you can look forward to that appearing in the near future, along with Layers of Fear Legacy, which is kind of the full version of Layers of Fear, presumably with all the DLC added in as well, which is that first-person horror game where you're wandering around a mansion and everything keeps changing. The paintings change, the layout of the rooms and the wallpaper changes, and spooky things appear and disappear, and the doors vanish behind you, and oh no, where am I?
Have you had a chance to play that one yet?
Oh yeah, I've got it on the PS4. I haven't completed it, but I played hours and hours of it. It's good, like, at doing the thing it's doing. For me, it got a bit repetitive, and I found that the gimmick wore old a little. But
But
it has a good initial impact, and it is, you know, I like the creativity involved in it. I don't think it quite sticks the landing, but there's a lot of good stuff to recommend there. I wouldn't necessarily choose it as an ideal portable Switch game, I don't know, because for me, that horror stuff working on a tiny screen is tricky. I like the big surround sound, you know, immersive. But then I guess if you're in the, you know, in your sofa, lights off, headphones in, probably be spooky as hell.
Yeah, I feel like it's that kind of game that if I got scared and I was playing on my, you know, with it on handheld, that I'd probably end up dropping the Switch just because my hands would do that automatic reaction thing.
I'm just picturing you now with your hands immediately in the air going, bah!
I do. I've pelted friends with Xbox controllers and everything before.
Oh, man.
Like, Dead Space was an experience.
For everyone else around you. Well, that's going to be coming to the eShop in February 21st, so like 2 weeks' time. $17.99 will be the price for that one, or $19.99. Layers of Fear Legacy, out very soon. Finding love in your own life is difficult at the best of times, but trying to hook up other people and ensuring that they have rich and fulfilling love lives, possibly even tougher. Kitty Powers Matchmaker came out on multiple platforms a while back and allowed you to kind of play Cupid in your own digital paradise. This has recently been followed by Kitty Powers Love Life, which takes it to a new level of organizing not only a couple, but numerous couples and their little love oasis. I am joined by the star of these games, Kitty Powers herself. Kitty Powers, welcome.
Hello, kitten. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, Maddie. I've been playing your game all morning, and I'm feeling all loved up. I can see that you're you've obviously put a lot of heart and soul into it.
Well, just in time for Valentine's Day as well next week.
It's good timing, isn't it? Worked out.
Get your practice in.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been working my way through bit by bit and playing the little mini games and exploring the love eggs. That was an exciting addition.
We do enjoy releasing the love eggs.
Yeah, that's a refrain that I did not expect to see on my screen. But
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm somewhat delighted that I did. So as the star of this game, and fans will obviously recognise you from, you're actually a character within it.
Yes.
What inspired you to take the lead role in this? Are you, in real life, a bit of a Cupid? Do you like hooking up your friends?
Actually, recently, my ex-boyfriend, a friend of mine came to visit me from LA, and we all went to hang out for New Year's, and my ex and my friend from LA ended up kind of becoming a couple. So I thought, oh, there's my matchmaking skills being used. So yes, I guess I am.
Pulled from the pages of your own life.
I know, it's fabulous, isn't it?
Talking about the game itself, obviously you've been in two installments now, the most recent of which is Love Life. What can people who have played the first game expect from the second one? What's different? How have you mixed things up?
Well, we wanted to keep the kind of format in some way. So you've still got the mini games and it still takes place as a series of scenes happening one after the other. But we've added a simulation element where you're running a town and you can erect locations for your villagers to go visit and hang out, and there they might bump into each other and make friends. So there's a sort of social interaction dynamic thing going on as well. So you've got couples who you're trying to kind of resolve their issues as they live together, and then you've also got friends who serve as an additional mechanic for when they need to come out of the closet and that kind of thing.
When it comes to the characters and the way they communicate in the game, a lot of it's via little messages and DMs and text bubbles pop up and whatnot. Now, they don't actually speak, but they do provide little vocalizations, Sims-style kind of oohs and us and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to assume that you did your own stunt work for the voices there.
I did.
Yes, the men all talk like that.
The women all talk like this. Except they don't really talk, yes.
You often sound delighted when we're clicking through things. Were you thinking of anyone in particular when you're making those noises?
Well, I wanted it to be generic enough. So it's like, you know, when me and my brother Alan, who writes the dialogue, we both love making stupid voices and like, I just think it's funny. It's just one of those things that makes us laugh. So when I was doing the VO, I wanted the male and female to be distinguishable, but they were still both. I mean, in the game, we take the mickey out of everything. So everything is a kind of a mockery of real life, really. When I was doing the men, for example, it got a bit too Mr. Bean at one point, and I had to kind of reel it back in. You don't need to
hello.
Then, too full throaty.
Yes, you don't want it to be too much. So I went a little bit in that direction. And then with the ladies, it's just like a bit of a sort of Monty Python lady voice. Hello.
Yeah, you can't resist that he's a very naughty boy kind of voice, yeah, well, the exactly. Monty Python.
Well, that's one of our Dane. Inspirations. Alan and I do, we obviously grew up together being brothers, and we both loved things like Kenny Everett and Julian Clary and Carry On movies.
You mentioned being brothers there. Like, obviously talking to Kitty there, but to drop the curtain a little bit, you are also the designer of the game as well.
That's right. Richard Frank.
Also Richard, that's right.
To be honest, the boundaries between me and Kitty do blur quite a lot, so you'll find me slipping in and out of Kitty rather often, which sounds bizarre.
See, I set
disgusting.
You up for that one, didn't I? That was too easy.
Oh, no.
So when did the persona come up in the first place? Is it something you've always wanted to explore? Because you worked at Criterion before you went indie and started making the Kitty Powers franchise.
Yes, that's right. I started there, must have been about 1993, and I worked on Burnout. I worked on a couple of other things, Skate or Die sort of thing they tried to do, which didn't happen. Burnout 3, Burnout Revenge, Burnout Paradise, Black, Hot Pursuit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After Hot Pursuit, I went on to do Burnout Crash, which was the first thing I directed. Was a mobile game. You might have played that. I don't think it's on the store anymore, actually. But that was cool. Kind of pinball inspired. And actually, that was what gave me a taste for the sort of arcadey and very accessible game mechanics that you'll find in Matchmaker.
There's a lot of mini-game stuff in there, because when I picked it up initially, I assumed it would just be dialogue, but actually you're playing with things like spotting items and memory games and stuff like that.
We do a lot about memory games, because we feel... With the mini-games, what we try to do is select mini-games or gameplay which kind of evokes the same feeling that you would have in that situation. You know, in the game you might be making a smoothie, and when you make things with ingredients, and you're trying to follow a recipe, it's always a little bit kind of, oh, am I putting in the right proportions? So we kind of made a mini game like that, which is one of our domestic dilemmas. Or like when you're having a little lover's tiff, you have a little argument between your couples, you'll play blackjack to see who can win the argument, who can persuade the other one that they're wrong.
I was surprised in the new one, because the little mini games and the stuff that you have to do is actually quite reflective of like real life situations, because you have to monitor this group of people. You've almost got like a little enclave, different houses in a neighborhood that you're looking after.
That's right.
And you can monitor them in kind of a Big Brother sort of way through cameras, and then you can see their exchanges and like a history of the conversations that they've had. And occasionally they'll like press a button and summon you for help, you as the matchmaker.
That's right.
And you have to sort of step in. And in order to solve the problems, you kind of need to go back through what they've said to each other and work out what's frustrating them, what they like and what they don't like, and then use that information to try and fix what their problem is. And often they'll ask a question and you have to go, do they like that? Does the other person like that? Are they both on the same page? And work it out like that. And it does bring to mind actual conversations with people you're trying to either appease or impress.
Well, that's exactly what it's based on. I mean, we try to design for the situation that we're trying to simulate rather than picking another game and sort of copying mechanics from that or trying to make a better version of an existing game. We specifically started with the situation, which was dating in Matchmaker and living together in Love Life, and actually create a simulation of those things from the ground up using the gameplay that was appropriate and almost finding inspiration in the situations themselves.
You got a lot of response from the original game when it came out. It's 2015 when the first one came out, I think.
That's
and
right.
It got like really taken to heart both by like the Steam communities and the online gaming communities, also by the YouTubers, lots of people making videos of that kind of thing. Do you think it's that you're serving an underserved niche here with the matchmaking stuff, with the idea of like love dating sims, or is it the persona that you think works, or why do you think it took off so well?
I think it's a number of reasons. Choosing a subject matter that everyone can identify with was a strategic decision. We wanted it to be accessible. We didn't want it to be too niche. Also, I wanted to make a game which was all about positivity and where the objectives were to make people happy and fall in love with each other, which was kind of a direct kind of reflection of the current kind of popular games about killing things and destroying stuff, which, you know, yeah. I have no problem with, but I felt like it would be interesting to explore the opposite end of the spectrum and see if we could make something positive, fun and engaging and arcadey.
Well, there's something almost altruistic about this one, because I had gone into it assuming it was going to be me, the main character, trying to date other people, when in fact you're trying to solve other people's love issues and match other people up. So there is this element of like taking yourself out of it and going, well, how can I help these guys?
Well, yeah, because I love making games that are procedural and which you can play forever, because I love games that have a lot of value for money, if you like, and simulations and stuff are perfect for that. And I do love procedural generation, so the characters are all procedural.
Yeah.
And also, if you were the character, you'd get to the end of the game and then it would be game over. But because you're serving these procedural little robots, these little characters that we've designed to be as... We try and make them as designed-looking as possible, even though they're all churned out of a machine. We try and give them as much humanity as we can. And we want you to kind of fall in love with these little people, even though they're not real.
Is a lot of this pulled for, like, real-life experiences with, for example, dating sites? Did you sign up to loads of those as, like, a research thing? Or was it just that you were a part of them anyway? And all the questionnaires, for example, that you're asked at the beginning when you sign up, you kind of have a version of that at the beginning of the game.
Yes.
Is it all inspired from, like, real encounters?
Kind of, yes. I mean, there's a sort of grounded... And I talked about drudgery earlier. We talk about stuff that is kind of earthy and that people don't really talk about when they're... Most things get whitewashed. It's like if you play a game like Kardashians or whatever, you know, everything's very glossy and they don't talk about dirty underwear or losing their phone or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like...
It's one of those aspirational things.
Yeah, we love to go for all that kind of grubby, everyday stuff to make it very immersive, because that's the sort of... thing that makes people seem human. That's what makes people human, is the stupid stuff that we do every day, but we're trying to make it into a fun, engaging game, which isn't
shame and panic. I recognize them well.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that does help it, like you identify it with your own real life experience and go, oh yeah, I remember that.
We really want to engage the player's feelings. Like, we really want to make the player feel things with the gameplay. So we know that people love to judge other people. We know that people love to be nosy buggers and interfere in each other's business. And we know people love control, even though these aren't all necessarily desirable qualities. We all love to kind of flex those muscles. And allowing people to do that in a video game means that they don't, you know, they get to kind of be the master of other people's lives and interfere with them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite satisfying. But because the ultimate goal of the game is to make people happy, there is a very positive energy that is put out by the game and watching the game. And even Kitty Powers is like the embodiment of that positivity. She just wants to spread the love.
Exactly. Well, you can find it on the App Store at the moment. It's on Google Play as well. Is it Android Day and Date?
It's on Steam, Android, Google Play, the iTunes App Store, and the Amazon App Store. And you can find Matchmaker also on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Oh, really? I didn't know it made it onto console.
Matchmaker only came out a little while ago on console, but we decided to give it a go and see how it took off.
Right, then. Well, best of luck with the new one. I had a good time.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing what yourself and Kitty gets up to next.
Thank you very much.
Out and about this week, Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition has arrived. To say this has been sort of anticipated by people is an understatement. And the end result has been worth the wait, but is an odd beast. Now, I know you haven't actually played it yet, have you, Em?
No, I watched that footage. Do you remember when there was footage like 4 months ago that came out? It was like 20 minutes long.
Yeah, you watched all that.
I watched all that for news purposes and also enjoyment.
Well, funnily enough, like, that's pretty informative of what the actual game is, which is what we've said in the review. Like, if you've watched all of this stuff, if you've seen 20 minutes of the gameplay and you think, yeah, I like that, I like the look, I like the charming chibi style of the characters, and I like the sort of truncated way that they've taken the original Final Fantasy 15 storyline, which is what it is, and kind of compressed it down into these chapters, you're probably going to like it. But it does fall into this strange middle ground of, like, what is this game and who's it for? Because it's Final Fantasy 15, the console game, but they've taken a bunch of stuff out of it, squeezed the storyline right down, still using the original voice acting. The combat is far, far simpler. So instead of you using full controls, moving the character around, attacking and all that, you just tap on an enemy and your man, Noctis, dives straight in and starts hacking away. And sort of you can just leave them there to do that and they will just work their way through the enemies. And you can kind of just watch if you want to. But if you want to be engaged, there is plenty of stuff still to do. So you can switch weapons around and you can use these kind of dodge attacks, or you can parry, because parry icons will appear to give you a chance to go ka-ching and then return attack if you want to. And plus the other characters, you know how you can use, I don't know if you played the console version of it originally, did you?
Nah, do you know what? I wasn't a fairly Final Fantasy person growing up, I admit. I just wasn't into it.
Okay, not a Final Fantasist. But in the console game, you've got these attacks that your other dudes can use, Ignis and the other two guys can perform special attacks, and you can still execute those via little pop-ups in the side of the screen that'll go, we're ready, and you can click on them and then they'll execute their little attack. And then you can swap targets and, you know, jump around in that warp attack that Noctis does, where he flies up to a hook on the wall and hangs there, and you can just warp between places. So you can still do all of that and get quite engaged and always be tapping away. So it supports both styles of play, the casual observer and the actual, you know, invested player who wants to play it. But then, if you've already played the game and you're playing this, it's kind of like, why? You've sort of already done this in a far more complicated and intricate and granular way. If you haven't played the game, or if you like Final Fantasy in general, this feels like a very stripped down, almost casual version of it, because it's less involved than the turn-based combat that we're used to seeing from the series proper. From especially all the mobile versions that we've had. It looks fantastic. Like, it runs really, really well. That whole change of the character art, I almost prefer it to the original quasi-realistic looking stuff, because I always felt it was a bit weird in Final Fantasy 15, them wandering around with mobile phones in the fantasy world, and, like, I guess I prefer it when they use a more heightened art style, you know, like the original kind of games. So this chibi thing really, really works for me. I think it's properly lovely. But then there's this other angle too, which is it's divided up into chapters, and the first chapter is free, and to buy all of them is going to cost £20. And you can pick the actual main game up for about a tenner now, like the original Final Fantasy 15. And I don't know, it's like a demake, but it's not. And it's like a remake, but it's not. And it's just a weird thing. I can see hardcore Final Fantasy people going, this is really casual and dumbed down and for idiots. And I can see people who, like, aren't familiar with Final Fantasy 15 kind of approaching it and going, oh, hey, this is fun. This is, like, really entertaining. And then going and playing a normal Final Fantasy game and be like, oh, what's this? This doesn't match up at all.
Yeah, is this a game for, like, people like me?
Maybe. Maybe. It's tapping a new market. I think it's really interesting. I enjoyed playing. I played through the entire first chapter and was moving on to the second one. I've enjoyed it. Like, and I've played that section of the game in the original. And it is, yeah, it's just unusual, and I'm not quite sure what to make of it. I think it's good. Don't want people to be put off by it, but I think they need to go in with expectations. And that's why I say, like you, if you've watched the video, it does really give you a good idea, because you are just tap to go there, tap to go there. There's not, like, complicated, you have to learn moves. There's not really a lot of, like, skill beyond reaction-based stuff in the fights where you're like, oh, quick, press that so that you can get your counterattack in. Beyond that, it plays like it looks. So if you watch the review, which has gone up on AppSpy, I've captured, like, loads of stuff from all over. Check that out. Even if you watch it and go, yeah, it's probably for you. But if the visual stuff doesn't win you over and you're like, well, maybe the gameplay will sell me, it probably won't, because there's not a great deal of it. So yeah, an odd one, but certainly an interesting game, to say the very least. Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition is the full name, out right now, free to download, free to start even, have that, Iwata.
Yeah.
But then £20 if you actually want to get the rest of it. So there you go. Let's do Kitty Powers Love Life, as we've been talking to Kitty herself. You've played this, I've played this. We've already kind of described what it's all about. How did you find it?
Definitely different from the first one.
Mm.
Like, that was one of the major things, because obviously matchmaker is all about getting the two couples together or trying to find two people that are compatible and to try and help them out to get onto that next stage in their relationship.
Yeah.
Whilst this one, you kind of just have you already have a couple that then moves into a house that you then have to make sure that they just don't kill each other.
Like life. Yeah, this is the next stage of the relationship, effectively. So they've already got together, and now, yes, you have to manage their domestic issues. In that way, it's quite a good sequel insofar as it takes the original mechanic and then progresses it that bit further. It's got also got that town management aspect you see in a lot of, you know, popular games. You have to manage your village and make sure everybody's okay, and it's a little bit Sims and all of that. I also, he didn't mention it on the actual podcast, but the interview rather, but you can import your relationships from the first game and then stick them in the second game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you can populate your town with your successful couples.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is neat, isn't it? Like Mass Effect. Yeah. And then you can watch them go stir-fry crazy while they try and kill each other. So I've only played it for about like 3/4 of an hour or so, and I get the feeling that if you enjoyed the first one and the mini game aspect of it, all the stuff we've already talked about with Rich, then you will probably enjoy this. But yeah, as we stated in the interview, it is a different thing. Don't go in expecting we're going to build more relationships. This isn't that. It is something else. But it's got a lot going on in it. So I think if you're a fan of the first one, you probably take to it.
Took me a little while to warm up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I played it for about an hour and a half last night before bed.
Okay.
I like the fact that they're trying something different with it rather than just rehashing the whole dating sim thing. Like, now it's definitely way more of a overall management thing.
Yes. And did you spin the love eggs?
I did spin the love eggs. I did. Good, several good. Times, actually.
Ooh, get you. Splendid. All right, then. Well, that's out right now. It's £4.99, $4.99. Kitty Powers Love Life. One of the games I think is going to be turning up in my Game of the Year list is Dandara, which is published by Raw Fury, who are the guys who did... it's fallen out of my head.
Kingdom New Lands.
That's right. Kingdom New Lands, a very interesting game in its own right. This is totally different, but sticks with the pixel art style, beautiful pixel art. And it is a platformer that's been released on all platforms, iOS, Android, it's out on the Switch. And it is you taking control of this lassie Dandara, who is kind of a folk hero. I think from Africa originally. She's an actual African folk hero. And the idea is that you're having to rescue these oppressed citizens of Salt. And Salt plays a key factor in the game. The mechanics are, it's a platformer. But it's a platformer where you traverse the world by pinging yourself from salty platform to salty platform. That's what that little white surface is. So you do this in the kind of reverse Angry Birds way, i.e. instead of pulling back in the opposite direction and then releasing like a catapult, you are pulling towards the direction that you want her to fly off to and then releasing, and she will flip and jump to the next platform that you've aimed her at. And you have to move around the world like that. There's no walking. There's no running or crawling. It is just jump, 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 jump. So you're leapfrogging all around the world. It feels great. Really, really good. And really good on touchscreen, which is kind of mad because we're always complaining about controls here. But I've seen people complaining about the controls on the other platforms going, oh, I really wish you could run. This is really annoying. I have to keep jumping. So I'm using the analog stick and pressing X or whatever to release. Whereas here, we are so accustomed on mobile to doing these kind of pull and release, push and pull, twangy, elastic style movement mechanics. It feels so comfortable. It's like, I know how to do this. I've been doing this for years. This is like perfect. And you can move really fast. You can, once you get down to it, there's a beautiful rhythm to you going ping, 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 around the map. And you move around so much quicker than if you were running or walking. Plus, you've got that kinetic kind of thrill of doing it. It feels great. And then the other aspect to it is it's a Metroidvania. So it's a fully crafted, this is no roguelike thing. They've built this massive world with a map screen where you're having to move around, going through these little portals that, you know, exit one stage, if you like, and then you emerge in another. And they're separate rooms indicated on the Metroidvania map. And then what you have to do is go and talk to people, and then they will give you certain skills that will allow you to backtrack and unlock other areas. And then you go down that corridor. And, you know, if you've ever played Castlevania, whatever, you know what I'm talking about. It's really beautiful. The movement is fun. The attack element, she fires these kind of flaming bolts out of a bow and arrow style thing, which get upgraded over time. That feels good. So you're leashing arrows with your right thumb and you're pinging around the environment with your left. That's it. That's the only two controls. And it's a really fun thing to explore. It disorients you as well, because you're constantly jumping from platform to platform. That means you're pinging off the wall, off the ceiling, down to the floor, onto platforms that are in the middle of the room that themselves rotate. So it's constantly moving your orientation around. And that makes reading the map quite tricky, because sometimes halfway through a stage you'll suddenly switch upside down. And it doesn't show you as a dot in the room with an arrow on it, like in a, you know, a GTA map, which shows you which direction you're pointing. It just shows you're in this room. And then you have to work out, like, right, now which way up am I in this room? And which of the four exits indicates the corridor that I want to get to? So it's really challenging you. And I like it. I think it's quite brilliant, actually. And that everyone should get it. Now, that comes with the drawback of it's £14.99 on all platforms, including iOS. And that's the kind of thing that is a tough sell for mobile gamers.
Which is, it's funny, isn't it? Because, like, if you have a game that you really genuinely like, and that runs wonderfully, and it's so worth the money and stuff like that, so you'd pay £15 for it on PC or console or something, you'd think it was a really good deal.
Yeah.
But on mobile, it's, like, completely extravagant.
Yeah, it's a much harder thing to convince people to do on mobile, so I will be interested to follow how well it does on mobile, how many units it sells. It's obviously going to limit sales massively, but I genuinely think it's a really great and lovely thing. Again, video review is up. Go and have a look at it. It's a comparatively big investment for mobile, but then the two big releases this week are £15 and £20. And you know what? They're both good things. They're worth money. So, you know, if you really like games, maybe you'll pay some money for them. Fantastic. Dandara is the name. Go and check out that stuff. Now, I'm going to whiz through because we're sort of swiftly running out of time now. Dig Dog. I've played Dig Dog. It looks like a Spectrum game. It's obviously riffing on Dig Dug. You are a white dog and you have to find a bone which is buried in the 2D landscape you're traversing. It looks like a proper, like, Manic Miner, old-fashioned monochrome 2D platformer. And you just sort of jump and then you butt stomp effectively to go and you will break a block in the ground when you butt stomp. So you have to kind of drill down, doof, 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 doof. And then when you jump and then press the jump button or the attack button, whatever you want to call it, your dog kind of flies horizontally. So you can smash through rock both horizontally and vertically. It's very simple arcade shenanigans, £2.99. I've played it for about 10 minutes. Quite good fun. We've done a review of it and I think we think it's sort of okay. So that's available right now if you want to take a look at it. We have got True Legacy, which I've only played for like 10 minutes, but this is a weird one. Text adventure in a sci-fi future setting where you're some kind of cop forensic dude examining a crime scene. And then it's pulling mechanics from... Do you remember or are you aware of Device 6 from Simogo?
No.
The guys who did Year Walk and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Device 6 was kind of this text adventure where you're scrolling around and then not only would the text mirror the environments that you were in, i.e. if you're going down a staircase, the text would kind of start formatted to look like a staircase, but it would start changing direction. So it would ask you to scroll down, and then there would be like a crossroad point and you could scroll left and you'd have to turn the device around so that the text was the right way up. And you're constantly twisting and turning your device. This does that. So it's a mechanic I've seen used before, where you have to go down different pathways, almost like the text. If you laid it out, if you zoomed right out, you would see that the text was a big map, top-down style map with different corridors branching off at compass points. And so you have to pursue the text down one corridor in order to find a bit of information, then go back to the original. You scroll back up the text, turn the device around, scroll back down the next corridor, and use that bit of evidence you found to unlock another bit on another path. I haven't played enough to see if it's any good. The visuals are very sort of simple, but quite moody and nice. I'm not 100% convinced about the dialogue stuff that's written, but it's an interesting look. We'll probably review it. £2.99, True Legacy is the name of that one. The X-Files Deep State is... As I mentioned,
it's your favourite game of the week, right?
Yes. Not so much X-Files as X-Fails. It is basically one of those G5 hidden object games combined with a procedural Telltale style, choose your response and then work out if the kid is guilty by gathering evidence. Lots of different chapters. It's not very well written and it's just not very good. I was winning for this to be good, because procedural stuff works well with point and click, but no. I don't think it's any cop. It's free to play, and I did the hands-on, and the developer of the game left a slightly chippy comment saying, glad you're enjoying it, underneath my video. So I've successfully annoyed them. Hooray. So that's out right now, X-Files Deep State, and Atomic Run Gun Jump Gun, which is how it must be pronounced, because it's all one massive word. Apparently, really hardcore 2D platformer out on the Switch. Haven't played it, don't have a Switch. £7.99, that's kind of neat. And Crypt of the Necrodancers come onto Switch. That's a weird and cool game that came from Steam, where you're having to kind of jump around a... It looks like a roguelike top-down thing, but you have to move in time to the music. A rhythm-based dungeon crawler, of all things. Yeah. And that was quite neat on Steam. I had a bit of a go. At £17.99 on Switch, if you want to have a look at that. There is actually loads more that Em's brought up, but we don't have the time. Sorry. So, go and have a look at Em's weekly roundup that she always does every Friday, don't you?
Yeah, between Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, because it's super useful, and she gives you all the links and all the prices and all the info and all the download options, and it's just, if you like mobile gaming, everything you need to know is right there. So go check that out on PG. Along with all the other reviews and everything else, and as always, thank you for listening. It's nice to have you here. Otherwise, it's just me and Em talking to ourselves, which, frankly, we would probably do anyway.
True.
Because it's a nice break from doing actual work.
This is really why we do the podcast.
Yeah, but don't tell anyone. It's we've got this grift on where we're just like, yeah, we're doing the podcast, and we just chat for an hour. It's great. Press record and just blab. Fantastic. So thank you for indulging us. And come back and join us next week for more Mobile Gaming Chatter. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.